You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K25. It is myself, Marunsi, alongside me as always, the three-time NBA champion, Mr. BJ Armstrong. BJ, another great day for you?
Only terrific.
Only terrific.
Yes, it is. A lot of action in the NBA yesterday. MLK Day here in America. And there was a lot of basketball. So where shall we start, my friend Mo, today?
Well, there's only one place to start.
Oh, okay.
The Warriors lost 125-85. A 40-point loss is their largest home loss under Steve Kerr ever. The worst home loss for the Warriors since 1985 versus Dallas. The 85 points is the fewest in a home game in which Stephen Curry has played since Steve Kerr became the head coach. So, you know, the Celtics went in there. They did their thing. Coming off the back of a very bad loss to the Atlanta Hawks in overtime, which they shouldn't have lost. And, you know, I guess this is karma for Steve Kerr not playing Tatum during the Olympics. The Celtics seemed very right. Did you see after the game? I stay with the smoke. I don't go to the smoke. I am the smoke. Did you see after the game, Steph and Tatum and Brown were kind of talking, you know, on the court after the game, and Steve Kerr tried to come up and join the conversation. They all just ignored him. Ain't no one trying to hear from Steve Kerr. But the Celtics beat the brakes off of the Warriors. In a post-game interview, Steph Curry says, "A big part of our season has been when we can't score, we lose spirit, we lose life, we lose competitiveness." Which is not something, it's not a good sign for any franchise. To be fair to the Warriors, they had a lot of injuries. Jason spoke about this post-game, and he said, you know, they had a lot of injuries, but this is, in the NBA, these are some of the trickier games, because you don't really know how to prepare for teams when they don't have their usual lineup. I know Draymond Green wasn't playing, and a few other guys weren't playing. So it's not so much the margin of the score, but it's kind of the mentality of the Warriors. That Steph's saying that they lose their spirit and their competitiveness when their offense starts to slow down.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it. I don't want to make a big deal because I have a rule. I have a rule that I learned as a player. I have a rule that I learned as an executive. The only rule I haven't done it as a coach yet. Okay. I haven't done it as a coach yet. No one should be allowed to speak after the game.
What? Ever?
Ever.
You have because to. It's in your contract. It's media obligations.
That doesn't mean that it's correct. The people who are making these rules, I'm guessing they've probably never played before. Okay.
Well, the PR stuff, I'm assuming they're just...
Here's why. It takes incredible discipline to get up there immediately following a game after participating in the game because you are emotionally attached to what just happened. So emotionally, 10 minutes, I think that's the rule. You have to be available to the media, which I respect the business of the sport. I respect the fact, let's get the comments of the players. But there's only one question that they continuously ask. Mo, how did you feel after your 25-point game? What was the feeling of making that shot? So emotionally, you are, you know, your emotions are high, good, bad, or indifferent. So having an emotional response is good for the media.
Yes. Because we're here talking about it right now.
Yes. However, leadership involves you bypassing your emotions and getting to the crux or the core of whatever the issue may be. There's no way that Steph Curry or anyone could, after going through that as a player, sit here and tell me what happens. Because you hear coaches, they deflect this all the time. I have to take a look at the film.
Yeah. But Steve Kerr, ironically, deflected a different question. They asked him about Trump's inauguration, and he said, "I didn't watch that. I was watching film instead."
Okay. Now, I'm just here to share with our audience what I know to be true. Not I think it to be true, I know to be true. The great coaches never address their team, good, bad, or different, immediately following the game. Why? You want to give the players space. You want to gather your emotions. You lose by 40 points. Okay, let me tell you what they're all thinking. Most of the coaches are like, hey, we put together a game plan. These da-da-da, da-da-da, didn't play. But the great coach will always say, that was my fault because I didn't prepare these guys, and they'll take on the responsibility. You never want to throw your guys under the bus. So when you take what Steph Curry said, I take it as here is a player that should have an emotional response immediately following the game. How would you like it, Mo? 5, 10 minutes after work every day, you work for 8 hours, you do these things, and then all of a sudden, Mo, how was work today? And then
I'm a troll though, BJ. I will come up with something funny every
yeah, that's fine. That's fair. That's
day.
fair. But after about 1,000 of those, the material
I'll
may
just
run
start
out.
hitting with them only terrific.
Yes. So you learn the discipline that's necessary. Okay. Because it's Steph Curry, he's probably at his most vulnerable state. He hasn't had time to reflect upon this. He hasn't had time to look at the film. He hasn't had time to do all of these things, right? He hasn't had time yet. Okay. They're down Kuminga. They're down Draymond. What do we expect? Do we think any just the Warriors, their uniforms come to the arena and then they're just going to win? So right now they are very vulnerable as a team because they have big expectations. But in the words of the great Chuck Daly, I'm a pretty good coach when I have great players. I'm pretty good. Okay? This is a league on talent, and right now they're short of two of their, let's say, top five players.
Well, they're also down Pajemski and Karl Anderson for last
Okay.
night's game.
So you have four players in your top eight. What do I expect here? Well, I expect Steph Curry as a competitor to think every time he steps on the court that he can win the game. I expect that. Why? He's a star player. That's how he's supposed to think. That's his programming. But you take four players out of your top eight and let's see how this works on any team. I don't care who you are. And this is what happens. So I get it. I'm not going to overanalyze this. However, Mo, I said it yesterday. I said it 3 months ago. When it ends for a championship caliber team, it always ends. It doesn't end well. And they now are going through this process. Due to injuries, age, talent, camaraderie, whatever you want to call it, this is going to be a tough journey for this group moving forward. They're not the same team that you and I saw during the NBA Finals. Just what was that 2 or 3 years ago? They're not the same team. So this is part of the process. And as a person who's experienced this firsthand, it happens to everyone. It's not fun to talk about. I don't get joy talking about it. Aging is not one of the fun parts of being a professional athlete. It's not fun at all. But no one is spared this path. No one. It happens to everyone. So, I was on a radio show recently in the Bay Area, and I said it then. This is how it works. Every organization, regardless of whatever sport, when you have sustained success like they've had over the last decade, this is part of it.
Well, I have another question about another team in the West, the Phoenix Suns, who are struggling.
Okay.
Last night they played the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they also took a huge loss, 118 to 92, which is not a surprise. The Cavs are the best team in the Eastern Conference this season. But KD said something in another post-game interview. This one was at his
Okay.
locker. He said, And I want you to take us behind the curtain on this. He says it's a tough defense to score on if you're thinking a shot is going to come open for you without you pressing the issue. We could have drove it a little bit more, but we don't play against a zone every game. We don't have a zone package yet. So the final bit of that quote of KD saying that they don't have a zone package yet in terms of an offense that they're going to run against a zone defense. It's January. We're 50% through the NBA season. At what point is this a Phoenix Suns thing, or is it a every team in the league? At what point do you go through that and situationally, okay, cool, if we're going to face a team playing this style of zone, this is what we need to do, so on and so forth as a team. Is that something they should have figured out in training camp, in the preseason, or is that something that they don't really look at until the playoffs come around?
Well, let me put it this way. I'm not gonna address that, because I'm not gonna address the simplicity of that question. So you say, okay, so Coach Bud, you're telling me right now that they don't have a zone offense. That's what you're
That
saying
I'm
right
not
now.
telling you, Kevin Durant is telling you.
Okay, let me. Kevin Durant is telling me that Coach Bud and his staff, 50 games or so into the season, whatever, however many games they played, they don't have a zone offense. Okay. Great. Okay. Now, we're talking about one aspect of the game. Every zone offense, you can run that versus, sorry, every zone defense, you can run your man-to-man offense versus that and execute. Okay? At a certain stage of your career, if you see a zone offense, a zone defense, it becomes natural instinct for me to say, oh, they're playing a zone defense. Let me attack the gaps. I'm a professional player. Let me take some responsibility here in a 24-second shot clock and apply the principles of a zone offense versus a zone defense. Meaning, if they're playing zone, let me put a player where they're not. If they're playing a 2-3, I'm going to basically play a 1-3-1 offense. If they're playing a 1-2-2, I'm going to play maybe a 2-1, put somebody in the baseline. Whatever the case may be, there are principles. However, here is the number one principle versus any zone defensive team: get stops.
Because then they can't set up the zone.
Okay. Now, I don't play half of the game and expect to win the game. I don't apply the responsibility for me to say, well, he's the coach and I'm just a player. No, I don't. And I don't know there. So I'm not saying that's what Kevin Durant did, but that's what reported. I'm not even going to ask that question, because I've watched Kevin Durant play in international competition and excel at an all-time
All-time level against defenses where the
versus
rules allow for the 3 seconds and,
yes, Kevin Durant can score anywhere on anybody at any time in any generation. So I'm not sure that the level and the sophistication of whatever that question was applies to an elite offensive player like him. Because if it's one thing I know about Kevin Durant, he can score. And if it's one thing I know he understands as well as anyone that's ever played at any time in any generation, Kevin Durant knows how to put that ball in that basket. He doesn't really need to play. He's that good. He just has, he's gifted.
And if I'm facing a team and they're running a 2-3 zone, I'm just putting KD at the nail. And either that's going to pull the big
Now,
up or he's going to shoot at the midi.
what I am concerned about when I watch this Phoenix Suns team play, because they have veteran players. This is not a young group. trying to figure out their identity, trying to figure out who they are. They have a championship caliber coach. They have championship caliber players. They have a player in Devin Booker who's gone to the NBA Finals, an elite offensive player himself. Here's the thing I'm concerned about. What is the identity of this Phoenix Suns team? That's my main concern. We can sit here and talk about their zone offense. No, I'm not going down that path. I'm past that stage. If it's one thing I know, that Kevin Durant and Devin Booker just spent their entire summer playing on Team USA. Just on recall alone, they know how to play against a zone offense, a zone defense. Just on recall alone. Okay? I'm not concerned about their zone offense at 50 games. You know what I am concerned about with this group? I'm concerned about how about get some stops? How about every time I watch you guys, you're taking the ball out of the basket? How about your rebounding? How about sharing the basketball with each other? And how about identifying the responsibility of the players? Because they have veteran players. Do your job. See, I can talk to another professional and say, hey, what's your job? My job is to set screens. What's your job? Your job is to rebound. What's your job? Your job is to guard the other team's best offensive player. What is the identity of this team? Because, Mo, they are expected, they were constructed with one idea, to win, and they're not doing it. And why are they not doing it, Mo? Because what's the identity of this group? Are they a defensive group? I don't know. Are they a group who limits the other team to one shot? Are they a group that likes to play fast, a la the Sacramento Kings? Are they a group who rim protects, a la Rudy Gobert or these teams, or the Cleveland Cavaliers this year? What's the identity of this group should be the only question that we're asking, because we know Coach Bud, when he has great players, he's a pretty good coach. So that I'm not gonna fall for that question, because I know one thing about Kevin Durant. Mo, if we were coaching Kevin Durant, we would not have a problem scoring that basketball. I can assure you that.
I don't need to coach Kevin Durant. Just let him be Kevin Durant.
Mo, I can do this very well. Let me just get out of his way.
Facts. But in response to the defense thing, that's why they put Ryan Dunn into the starting lineup and put Bradley Beal off the bench in an effort to get more defense in that.
Well, as you are...
And they traded. We didn't even discuss. They traded for Nick Richards, who's now their starting center.
Yeah, I am. I know I say this, and it's not the thing to say that gets clicks, but it's the truth. You have to defend in this league. You have to defend. You have to. If you want to win, if you want to win, there's two things you have to do. Well, there's really three things, but there's two things for sure. You have to defend and you have to rebound. And then on the other end, you have to share the ball. That's called passing. And then you have to be a professional and do your job. What's your job, Mo? If your job is to set screens, do your job. If your job is whatever your job is right now, Mo, scoring the ball shouldn't ever be a problem with this team. They have Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. It's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But what is the problem? Well, I'm going to put this guy. No, defense is played as a team last time I checked. That's a team thing. They have to figure out how they can defend. They have to figure out how they can rebound the basketball. I've said this before. I'll say it again. In my humble opinion, with Kevin Durant at this stage of his career, I do not want him playing the four position with that body type. I've said it when he was in Brooklyn. Kevin Durant is a magnificent 7-foot player who should play to his advantage. What's his advantage? He's a 7-footer. So why not have a big team, a tall team, when Kevin Durant's on the floor? Why? Yes, can he play the four in some parts of the game? Yes, of course he can. But let's allow him to be a 7-foot 3-man. That's a problem.
Now you can at least address 7 foot, 7 foot as your center at 6'10 or 6'11. At least you can rebound. That's a start. At least you can rebound. Now you're instead of being a small team, you're a big team now. And then you can play different variations of that during the course of the game, depending on personnel, matchups, so forth and so on. But Kevin Durant should be a three-man because he gives the team an unfair advantage. He's taller. I'm just trying to think who else plays who's some, but Michael Porter Jr. maybe?
Yeah.
He's taller than most.
Yep.
So that gives them an advantage every night at one position. But on the other hand, you put him at the four, he's playing against people who are much bigger than him. So why? I don't understand that. If I'm coaching him, when he's with the Golden State Warriors, yeah, he would start out as the three. Three, Draymond was a four, Kevon Looney, JaVale McGee, all those guys. That's a big team with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Kevin Durant gives you an advantage. To me, what's the point of having him if you're not going to utilize his strength? His strength is he is a 7 foot small forward who gives you an advantage, who can shoot and score on anyone. And he commands a double team. So to me, that's what it is. Unless Kevin Durant quietly behind the scenes is saying, hey, I only want to play the four for whatever reason that may be. I don't know that.
I think he just wants to play.
But I'm playing him. I'm playing him at the three.
The Warriors and the Suns are both now 21 and 21. They're both 500, 10th and 11th in the West. Which team do you think finishes higher by the end of the season?
Kevin Durant does.
Even if the team stay as currently constructed.
You have Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. They have a puncher's chance every single night. Either one of those guys can go for 50 any given night. Who can you say that with the Warriors? Okay, Steph.
That's it.
There you go. You have a puncher's chance. And Bradley Beal is capable of scoring 30 even though he's coming off the bench. If he gets going, they're going to let him rock. Mm. They're going to let him play. So I think the Phoenix Suns right now, when I watch their team, right? I haven't studied their team, but when I watch their team, they have a glaring weakness. A glaring weakness. One, you have to have that lead guard who plays downhill. I love Tyus Jones. I do. I think he is when Tyus Jones was with the Memphis Grizzlies, you could argue and you could have made the argument that he was the best backup guard in the entire NBA.
Yeah.
Okay. You could make that argument. I think he's very capable. However, you must have a lead guard that plays downhill. That's not what he doesn't excel at playing just downhill and applying pressure to the team. He's a facilitator. He's an organizer. He understands the position, but there's a certain way that you have to play. And the second, you have to have a shot blocker. And you have to have a defensive presence. Okay. Kevin Durant can score. Scoring is not your problem. But you must have a defensive presence. A shot blocker, a guy who brings a level of physicality to the game, someone who can score when Durant is double teamed. I mean, Mo, they have two guys that will command a double team. So now you're playing advantage basketball, 4 versus 3, 3 versus 2, 2 versus 1.
But when you say you want Kevin Durant at 3, what kind of player would you want at the 4 alongside him?
I want someone that can defend and guard and play with the level of physicality that's necessary in today's game, right? So, for instance, when you play against the Golden State Warriors, not the Golden State Warriors, the Denver Nuggets, you have to match the physicality of Aaron Gordon and Jokic.
Yeah.
Now, I love the matchup of Kevin Durant and Michael Porter Jr. Advantage me. I don't like the matchup of Kevin Durant having to bang with Aaron Gordon for 48 minutes. No. I don't like that.
So who else around the league could they be targeting to to bring it because they can't sign anyone. They're going to have to make a trade. They
Well,
have, I
I
think,
don't think
one
that
pick left to trade and.
they can only go in the market for where they're at for their salary cap, right?
Yeah.
Who are you going to trade? Who are you going to trade? Bradley Beal, Bradley.
He's
That's
got no trade
your.
clause. You can't trade
He's got
him. Like,
another.
that's why they made the move for Nick Richards for Josh Okogie.
Yeah, you have to be able to match the physicality, and at the center position, I would have, been identifying or targeting a center who can rim protect, because I don't have to worry about scoring. Like, you have three guys that can score over 30 points in a playoff game. So why am I trying to target someone that can pass the ball at the center position or score at the center position
Yeah,
when
I
I
think they
have?
realized the Nurkic experiment has not worked out, and apparently they're trying to offload his contract, but no one around the league is
Yeah,
trying to take that deal on.
listen, Nurkic is serviceable in this league. However, when you're building a team, build around your best players. To me, it's a no-brainer. Like, okay, we have Kevin Durant, we have Devin Booker, we have Bradley Beal. Okay, I can score the basketball. I can score with the best of them. So what's the one thing I want to surround those guys with? I want to surround those guys with players who don't need the ball to be effective on the floor. I want to surround them with elite role players who can do two things. They can defend their position respectively. They can add defensive principles like shot blocking, loose balls. Okay. And clearly, we need spacing because those guys are going to command a double team. If not every night, every other night. So maybe it was a, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not pretending to know their finances and what they're doing. However, it just seems obvious to me as you look at it to say what's needed. Now, I also think that it would be in their best interest to have a lead guard who can play with pace. You hear me talk about pace, right? You
Yeah.
have to have those guards who can play and apply pressure to the game, because you just don't want to play through Kevin Durant and Devin Booker all the time. You have to play a team concept that's going to allow those guys to play and force them to play how the group plays. Because Kevin Durant in the half court is going to get the ball. He should get the ball 75% of the time. And the other 25 should be Devin Booker when they're on the floor together. And when Kevin Durant is out of the game, then Devin Booker should get the ball 75% of the time on the offensive end, and you play through him. He's that good of an offensive player. So scoring is not a problem here. The problem is they can't do the other things that allows them to be a great team, which is consistency. And those are the consistent things that every good team has to address.
Well, it's going to be tough for them with the way their roster is constructed and the salary is constructed to make any huge changes to what they currently have. But as we get closer to the trade deadline, which is less than a month away now, we will see what moves they have in store. But that's another episode of the Hoop Genius podcast. Suns fans, Warriors fans, stay strong. Wishing you guys good luck. But not really, because I don't really want to see you win. But,
There's one thing I wanted to give a. Mo, you sent me a thing about Isaiah Collier.
I did indeed.
You sent me this, and this young man. Let me make sure I get these numbers correct here. Mo, he had last night, Isaiah Collier, another really good game. He had 20 points, 11 assists, 4 rebounds, and a steal. My son's favorite statistical category. He
Steals.
loves steals.
Yeah.
And a steal. This young man, Isaiah Collier, is figuring it out as we go along here, right in front of us. And it was very nice of you to send that, Mo, because I love a project. I love young
Yeah, for
players.
context, in the month of January, Isaiah Collier is 12th in the league in assists per game with 7.6. There is no other rookie in the top 25.
Yes. And you can see, what is this, January 20th, 21, somewhere
21st,
around
yeah,
that. Yeah,
21st of
21st of
Jan.
January. I want to say this to all young players, all young players. Currently now, we have a
transition that's happening in professional sports, in particular in basketball. The system in which we relied upon for the last 50 years or so no longer exists. College athletics. College athletics was the route predominantly taken by most amateur players before declaring to become a professional player to develop. Okay. And most of the high school players here, before going to the NBA, predominantly they would go to college for 1, 2, 3, 4 years, develop, go to the NBA, and suddenly you have an opportunity, depending on what your level of talent, to be a professional player for however many years you're fortunate enough to play. So, Mo, that could have been an 8 to 10 year process to develop. Suddenly now, most of the players, the better players who are going to the NBA, the path, they go to college for 1 year.
A few months.
Basically, a few months, 6, 7 months they're on a campus before going to the NBA, which brought about new ways or different ways to develop, right? The G League and other prep schools and other ways to develop. And when you look at it overall over the last, let's say, 10 years, clearly the European model, they've developed the best players, right? Jokic, Luka Doncic, Shea Alexander, so he's from Canada, Wimby, and others. The reason I'm saying this is because I want to say this to all young players. When you are going through your recruiting process in high school, there are going to be three things that's going to be said to you. Okay. I want everyone, when you're being recruited, there's going to be a coach and he's going to say three things to you. He's going to claim, first, we run an NBA style offense. Okay. The second thing he's going to say, we play positionless basketball. Okay. And the third thing he's going to say, we develop players that get to the NBA. So let's say that again. The first thing he's going to say, we play an NBA style offense. He's going to say, we play positionless basketball.
I ain't seen no college teams running an NBA style.
Okay. And then he's going to say, we develop players. Now, if someone says that to you and to your son, I just want you to just remember this conversation, because in the end, currently right now, we have a problem because there's no place for these young people to go to understand the professional game. Here in America, Mo, there are many games, Mo, they don't even have a shot clock, let alone a 24-second shot clock. We're not preparing our young people, okay, for the ability to recognize what it's going to take to become a professional, let alone preparing them and equipping them with the skills necessary to be a professional player. Because we know this, Mo. And one thing we have to also address is that everyone is not going to make
to the NBA. Only 30 first round picks, 60 so, overall, you know.
I just wanted to say that to the young people here, because now that Isaiah Collier has made a turn here. I mean, here was a young man, Mo. I mean, you know how hard it is, Mo, to play a position as a lead guard in this league, and score 20 points and then get double figures in assists. I mean, Mo, that's hard. And the reason that's hard is because every young person should know this. The hardest thing to learn how to do when you become a professional player, at not even a professional player, at any level, at the lead guard position, is when to pass and when to shoot. That's an art. You just don't wake up doing that. Some players have a natural feel for it, but most of us have to learn that. So here's my challenge to all of the coaches, executives here. We, the adults now, have to figure out what is the system that's going to allow our young people to be able to compete in this new world, in this new environment. Because the system that we currently have in place is not addressing the issues, right? The issues are academic excellence, the issues is athletic excellence, and then human excellence, the human being, the human aspect of all of this. So that's my little challenge today for everyone. Because Isaiah Kyer is facing that challenge as a young player. And we can watch this in real time as this young man is making adjustments night in and night out. Their next game, he gets an opportunity to play against the very best player in the world, Shai Alexander, in OKC Thunder tomorrow night. We have to prepare our young people for these challenges. And we have to prepare our people for give them the skills so that they can figure out what it is they're trying to do and what they want to do. But more importantly, and what I'm really trying to say here, Mo, is this is truly now a global game. It belongs to the world now. A quarter of the players, and will be more than a quarter of the players in, let's say, 5 years or less, will be more international players that will be coming. It may be 50-50 in 5 years or so or more. Mm-hmm. But we can't argue now that the best players, the best young players now in the world are the international players. That's a fact. And it's only going to continue to improve because of the preparation that goes in for moments that we call the NBA or professional sports. And when you sent that to me, Mo, it just reminded me of all of the things and all of the coaches and all of the leaders and all of the people that play into success in a young person's life. And here we get an opportunity with Isaiah Kyer because of his family, because of all of the coaches, because of all of the people who can get him to a space where, Mo, he can actually go out there and perform. This is very, very difficult. The task that these young people have today is overwhelming because, Mo, I think the rest of the world now, not only have they caught up with the coaching, in some ways, Mo, I think they've passed us. Mm. And in some ways, Mo, I think the preparation that many of the young players who are not from America, they could be more prepared for moments like this. And when I say a moment like this, to become a professional basketball player, on and off the court. So that's my little two cents on that. When you sent that, that's what came to my mind. And I wanted to share that with you, Mo, because I thought it was interesting that you just sent that to me. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's really difficult what he's doing in a place where he's at in his career. I mean, a first year player being able to do that, that's really, really difficult. And I just wanted to make sure that we recognize his work, the staff work there in Utah, and what he's done, his family, but more importantly to him, because he's doing the work every single day. And I'm really interested to see where his career goes, because I saw something in that young man. And you know I love a project, Mom. You know I love a project like this. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to see his career, where it's going to go, because he is really, really making strides. So,
absolutely, absolutely. We'll be watching more Utah Jazz basketball, which for once I'm looking forward to. So yeah. That'll be fun. That'll be fun. You know, they've also got Filipowski as well, another player who slipped in a draft. And, you know, they got Bryce Sensabaugh, who's pretty interesting prospect as well, but we'll be back tomorrow with more from the Hoop Genius
podcast. And he's got a former Celtic, Danny Ainge.
Come on, man. Danny knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? He knows what he's doing. So you know, shout out to Danny every time. But we'll be back. So subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, and until next time, get buckets.